time of year, and then we'll come back when we're going to find out what they've been up to since they've last been here. Did they make the trek across China? That's what you were preparing for the last time you were here. So we'll find out all about that and where they're going next and all that good stuff. And then hopefully we're going to have time by the time we get to the third hour to open the phone lines, or at least to get some calls or some emails from you to find out what you want us to talk more about.
Okay.
Because you know that we could be here for weeks just talking about all this stuff. So stay with us. Animal World continues until noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
The preceding hour of Martha Norwalk's Animal World was brought to you by Jones & Company Pets. Their goal is happy, satisfied customers enjoying happy, healthy pets. Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KWJZ 98.9 FM, Digital HD3 Seattle.
Hi, this is Martha Norwalk with Animal World's fall and winter tips for you and your animal friends. With the obvious change in our weather, getting colder and wetter, there are several things that pop into my mind that are important for you to think about related to your animal companions. The first is house training. There can be related problems at this time of year with both dogs and cats. Let's start with dogs. Many do not like to go outside in the rain or when it's cold. And do you really blame them? We don't like it much either. The biggest problem is usually the small breeds, younger pups and older dogs, particularly the spoiled and lazy models. But weather-sensitive dogs can be any breed, small or large, and they can even be created by their owners. Remember, dogs are monkey-see-monkey-doers, and they tend to copy our behavior. So if you're raising and educating a puppy in the house training department, most of you probably don't mind going outside with the pup to supervise and praise the good behavior when the weather is nice. But when the weather's bad, most of you are either very unhappy during the outing, or you don't go out at all and make the dog go out all by himself. Herein lies the problem. Dogs pick up and sense even subtle feelings from their people, and they may begin to associate going out in the rain or cold with bad feelings and not want to do it. If you make them go alone, they may not go all the way out in the yard. They'll hold it to deposit indoors when they come back inside. So think about this. When the weather is good, you go out with the dog feeling happy and saying something like, "Oh boy, outside, let's go outside," and then go potty. Good go potty, good go potty. This is great, and the dog or pup learns to like going outside. But if the weather's bad and you have an attitude change, get grumpy, and on the way outside grumble something like, "Oh, yuck, it's rainy, it's cold, I don't want to go outside, I hate this, come on, bozo, outside, go potty." Even if you're only thinking this, pretty soon, when the weather is bad, your dog will be thinking, "Yuck, it's rainy, it's cold, I hate this, I don't want to go outside." And you will have created the problem. Now, this is easy to avoid. Keep this in mind when raising puppies or working with sensitive dogs. You can convince most dogs of anything if you have the right sales pitch. So the yuckier the weather is, the jollier you must be. "Oh boy, bozo, it's raining. Oh boy, let's go outside. Oh boy, oh boy." And act like you're going to the party of the year. You can even add a tasty little food reward. It must be given on the spot outside. This can make it even more positive. With medium to large breeds, this is usually only necessary during the house training process. Once the dogs get it, it sticks. But with small breeds and sensitive models, you may need to do a refresher course of outside and jollies in bad weather, and during the fall as the weather changes, to avoid a relapse in house training manners. Elderly and or invalid dogs may require this on a consistent basis. With all dogs, I think it just makes sense to have a wonderful dry-off and warm-up ritual after outings in the rain. Give them something to look forward to. And for seriously rain-sensitive dogs, they make doggy raincoats. Some even come with built-in hoods or umbrellas. Make a canine fashion statement in your neighborhood. And remember to tell your dog friend how fabulous they look. Now, let's talk about cats. They can be weather-sensitive also. Indoor-only models, not a problem. But indoor-outdoor models can have a problem, especially if you're used to a cat that always goes to the bathroom outside. The time may come when the weather is just too bad for them to be willing to go outside. So just in case, maintain an indoor cat box for emergencies. Also, cats that go through cat doors to boxes in garages or basements may not want to use them if it's too cold. Lastly, keep in mind that if your cat friend is older or has developed physical problems, they may feel too vulnerable to go outside, and an indoor cat box may be necessary. Next on my list is a reminder. If you are going to winterize your own car, please remember that antifreeze is extremely toxic and deadly for our animal friends, and it is also extremely attractive to them because it tastes very sweet. So be very careful with it, or better yet, use the non-toxic safe antifreeze. Another general tip, as the weather gets colder, if your animals spend extended periods of time outdoors, make sure they have dry and reasonably warm shelter and fresh, clean water, especially when temperatures drop below freezing. And dogs need regular exercise, even when it's cold or wet. Heck, so do we. So keep it up. Another interesting fact about this time of year is that all bodies, animals as well as humans, need more balanced omega fatty acids during cold weather to maintain good skin and hair coats. The easiest way to be sure your animal friends are getting enough is to add the Missing Link supplement by Designing Health to their food. The need for increased omega 3 and 6 oils in their diet increases even more as we turn the heat on in our houses because this can dry out their hair and skin. So avoid winter skin and coat problems with the Missing Link. Now, the last thing on my list is one of the most important, fleas. Even if your animals have been flea-free this summer, it's still important to pay attention now. As the weather gets colder, so do the fleas. Once the outdoor temperature drops consistently below 50 degrees, they cannot survive, so they'll be looking for a ride indoors. You'll need to prepare so they don't infest your home. If you have a problem with fleas this year and you want to get rid of them, now is the time to get serious. In either case, what you need to do is pretty simple. The best way to prevent an infestation from getting started or to eliminate an ongoing one is a safe, natural product called Fleego. Fleego is a powder that you sprinkle into the carpets and animals' bedding. It dehydrates fleas and their larvae, and it really worked. It's what I use to nip fleas in the bud in my environment. You can pick it up at almost any pet store, and fleas or not, keep Fleego on hand just in case like I do. Now, if you've got a current flea problem, once the Fleego is down, bathe and or spray your dogs and cats. You can get safe, natural sprays these days, then flea comb regularly until you're sure they are gone. And keep listening to Animal World because next spring I'll tell you what to do so you don't have a flea problem next year. Well, that takes care of my list for now, but stay tuned because Animal World will be right back.
When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Now wake up, you sleepyhead, get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red, live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue, now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin starts bob, bob, bobbing along.
This hour of Martha Norwalk's Animal World is brought to you by Canada Pet Foods. Superior quality in every bag and can.
Good morning, y'all. I'm Martha Norwalk, and welcome you to the second hour of this week's edition of Animal World. We're here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. You can tune us in on the radio dial. You can tune us in on the internet via streaming audio. That means you can share us with your family and friends around the country, around the world, if they've got internet access. The best way to pick up the stream is go to the Animal World website. That would be www.marthanorwalk.com. Click on the Listen Live icon in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. That will click you through to the 1150 KKNW website. Click on Listen Live again, and that will bring up the instructions that you need to stream the show. All right, it is a special Sunday here on Animal World because we've got two of our absolutely favorite guests in the studio. Helen and Bill Thayer are here, adventure travelers and educators, and boy, if you haven't been here over the years and all the shows we've done together and heard the incredible stories and the treks these, as they call themselves, recycled teenagers, mm-hmm. They really are. Sandy, and we were talking when you guys showed up, when we saw you for the first time this morning, because it's been several months since, kind of a while since we've seen you.
Yes, long time now.
You guys look younger than you did the last time you were here. You actually look better and younger and more fit.
Well, that's the plan.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I can't believe what you guys do. Gary couldn't even do what you do. And he's a baby. All right. So we were talking about, now Sandy got some calls. They were wanting to know about the books and all of that. And they are available through your website, www.HelenTheyer.com. And you can read the bios and the treks that they've been on and so forth. You'll, I'm sure, be as amazed as we are.
Because they can be purchased through the website, and I would send an autograph copy.
Oh, if you get them through the website, an autograph copy. You probably get them through Amazon, too, can't you?
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. But if you go through Helen's website, she'll send you an autographed copy.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. All right. And we did have some calls wondering if we were giving away books, and Sandy, of course, said, no, we only give away books when they're new. These are not new books. But when you're doing Charlie's memoirs, that's going to be the next book coming out, right? Mm-hmm. So when that book comes out, you'll be one of your, this will be one of your first stops.
I'll definitely be here.
And that day we'll give away some copies of the new book.
Right,
but
okay.
See, if you want free copies of these books, sorry, we did that long time, you know, when these books came out.
That's right.
Not
yes.
doing it again. You got to buy them. But both, let's see, Polar Dream, of course, is out in paperback. Are the other two?
They're both in, they're all three are in paperback now.
All three are out in paperback. Okay.
Yes.
I have the hard copies of the Three Among the Wolves and the Walking the Gobi. But at any rate, let's see. I don't remember how long it's been since the last time you were here. It's been way too long.
It's been that since we were here, we've been to the Amazon and
Well, let's see, the last
Alaska.
Time you, okay, so what it's been probably a year since
yes,
you've been
I think
here.
It has.
Has it been about a year?
Yes, we were in the Amazon last summer. And so we haven't been here since then.
Wow.
Time goes
How
fast.
How did that time? It's gone way too fast. Now, the last time you were here because, or what our main topic of discussion is, you were planning to walk across China.
Yes, Tibet and China. And those plans are still on board. But with the Olympics coming up, the Chinese became very nervous. We don't go as tourists. We have special visas to go to places where tourists are not normally allowed to go.
Okay.
And the Chinese have become very nervous since the Olympics. They're a little bit concerned about all sorts of things. And there were some problems in Tibet where they clamped down on the indigenous people of Tibet again. And then there were celebrations, anniversaries of certain events, and the Chinese tend to clamp down at those times.
Mm.
And so we decided that we would go back to Africa and concentrate on some African expeditions and then go back to Tibet and China when things have settled down.
Okay, so the trek across is Tibet and China.
It's still on.
It's on the back burner.
Yes.
You're working on it, but it hasn't happened
yet. We're just waiting,
yet.
Waiting for a better time.
Okay. So you're still going to do that?
Yes.
Unbelievable. So then the next trek you made then was back to the Amazon?
Yes, we returned to the Amazon and kayaked around 1,000 miles just to revisit some of the places we had been before to check on climate change because I've been an affiliated professor with the University of Alaska, geography, and climate change has been a very big subject for us. And so we returned to the Amazon to see what was happening, and there definitely are changes taking place, some of them quite dramatic.
All right. Well, let's take care of our advertisers and sponsors for the time being, and then we'll have a big, long segment where you won't have to be interrupted, and so you can tell us about the Amazon trip.
Yes.
And so we'll find out what they've been doing in the last year, and then we'll find out what they're planning to do. It sounds like Africa is on the docket.
That's
right. Cool. Oh, boy. All right, stay tuned. Animal World continues right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Today's pampered pets deserve a big apology. Pets are fed the same processed foods meal after meal, which they would never eat in the wild. Research continues to prove that the more we consume processed foods, the more health suffers. Over 25 years of Dr. Wysong's research has proven that pets suffer from the same degenerative diseases plaguing their human friends. Pets don't have a choice about what's put in their bowl, and their human caretakers have been led to believe that they're doing the right thing by feeding this way. Learn more about it at www.wysong.net. Wysong, the thinking person's pet food.
Call karma specialist and metaphysical mother Robin Alexis for your free on-air readings at her new time on Wednesdays at noon. Psychic medium Robin Alexis helps countless people to live fuller and more conscious lives on Mystic Radio with Robin Alexis. Call Wednesdays at noon for your free on-air readings. Hear rebroadcasts of Mystic Radio on Thursdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150. And check Robin's new Reiki Healing Energy portal at robinalexis.com.
Canidae Pet Foods is committed to providing you and your pets the highest standards of excellence for product quality, palatability, and customer satisfaction. They pride themselves on making only the highest quality all-natural pet foods using the finest ingredients available. All of their products are made the Canidae way with superior quality in every bag and can, with no corn, wheat, soy, grain fractions, fillers, or byproducts, and they're naturally preserved. Discover for yourself and your pets the benefits of feeding Canidae and Felidae all-natural pet foods. Go to www.canidae.com for more information.
Tired of the insanity of other talk radio stations? Just click your radio knob and say, there's no place like Alternative Talk 1150.
Hey y'all, Martha Norwalk, and I want to say thank you for spending your Sunday morning with us here on Animal World. Hope you'll do it every Sunday morning. We're here 9 a.m. to noon right here on Alternative Talk AM 1150. And if you miss any part of the show, want to listen over, or want to share it with friends, and they're not available to listen live, you can always go to the Animal World website, www.marthanorwalk.com, and click on the audio archive link on the home page, and you can listen to any of our past shows, well, since we've been archiving them. And you can listen whenever you like. So it usually takes, we usually get the show up later in the day on the Sunday after the show, or at the latest the day after. That's when Gary messes up the detail and the, doesn't get it to the webmaster. You can tell he's in the doghouse, can't you? Anything to beat up on Gary.
Nice pun.
Yeah.
Doghouse.
Well, see, I didn't even mean that. One just came out automatically. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, see, once he gets the Husky fight song and plays that for me, then he's going to be back in good graces, and I won't be beating up on him.
Don't hold your breath.
See? He just, oh, my word. All right. Now, I realized that with the phone calls and so forth, we obviously have people listening that have not heard you guys on the show before. So I think before we go back to the Amazon trip that we haven't heard about, let's fill people in a little bit on your background. And so tell us where you grew up and how you met.
Well, I was born, raised, educated in New Zealand, and started climbing mountains when I was 9 years old with my parents and Sir Edmund Hillary, the first person to summit Everest. That he was a friend of the family.
Uh-huh.
And so I had these wonderful people. I was surrounded by wonderful people, including my parents, who were role models. They set goals, they planned, and were very successful. And so I continued on, determined to be lead an outdoor life as they did. And then in my teens, throughout my life, I was interested in other sports. I represented three countries in international track and field: New Zealand, the country of my birth, and then Guatemala, where I lived, had a permanent visa there for some time, and then United States after I became a citizen. And eventually I became United States National Luge Champion.
The luge, that's that Winter Olympics deal.
That's
when
right.
You get in that sled and you go so fast down there. That's scary stuff.
Yes, you're one person on your back, feet first, no brakes. But in the
And you were the international champion?
I was the United States
United
national champion.
United States national champion.
And then I'd met Bill, American-born, and from Needles, California. And he and I met in New Zealand. He was a helicopter pilot. And we were married in New Zealand. Excuse me.
But as I recall, so you're a little younger than Bill.
Yes, I am. Right now I'm just about 72, and Bill just turned 83 the other day.
All right, so about 9 years difference.
11
years difference.
11 years and 4 days.
At 72 and 83.
Mm-hmm.
Now, okay, you folks that don't know Helen and Bill and have been listening, and you've been listening to what they do, what they just have done recently, what they're planning to do, did you have any idea they're 72 and 83? It's unbelievable. They truly are recycled teenagers. It's unbelievable. So you're in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
On the farm, or
it's right on the farm, sheep, cattle, dairy, and then
Bill's a helicopter pilot.
Yes, and he'd been transferred to New Zealand as an agriculture pilot, and my dad hired. He called the company, asked for a pilot and helicopter to do some eliminate some a bush called gorse. It's very, very prevalent, and not good for the pastures. And so they sent Bill, and he'd only been in the country 3 weeks.
Ah.
And so we met, and we became friends the first minute we met. It was basically love at first sight, you might say.
Yeah, yeah. How old were you then?
Well, eventually I was 23 when we married, because we knew each other a year and a half before we were married, and then married in New Zealand.
So you guys have been together like forever.
We've been married 48 years.
Wow.
Last July.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you.
But it was love at first sight.
Oh, yes, yes. We were fast friends immediately. And the job should have taken probably 3 days. It took over a week.
So Bill took his time.
Yes, that's right.
Doing the job that he was there to do.
Because my dad had just had a foot operation, and so he sent the farmer's daughter out to show the pilot where the flying should take place. Well, that was excellent. Couldn't have worked out nicer. So then we were married.
Was your dad okay with the pilot taking his daughter?
Yeah. My parents were. They thought it was quite wonderful.
All right.
And so it worked out well, and we were married on July 1st of 1961, and Bill was transferred to Guatemala and Honduras.
Ah, that's how you got to represent Guatemala.
That's right, yes, because we lived in Guatemala and Honduras almost 4 years, and he flew there, then we were transferred back to the United States, and
So you were doing track and field for Guatemala?
Yes, that's right. I was captain of their track and field team.
So what events did you participate in?
Well, my specialty was discus throwing, but in Guatemala I became the shot putter and the 5'3" shot putter and a javelin thrower. So I was
that's her height, 5'3". I mean, they're not large people.
No, I'm 5'3", Bill's 5'5".
But there's a powerhouse packed inside both of them, I'll tell you that.
But yeah, the huge advantage is we can take small tents. We don't need large tents. We fit nicely. We don't need a lot of large gear in our expedition gear. But they always told me I was a foot too short and 150 pounds too light for a discus thrower. But you did it anyway. I did it anyway because it's what I wanted to do. And I eventually threw it 204 feet. So,
wow.
And so, but we...
Now, Gary, you should be impressed with that, huh?
That's a long way.
Yeah.
And so then Bill and I, I walked to the pole. Well, one day I was standing on top of Peak Communism in Tajikistan at about almost 25,000 feet.
Because you've done a lot of mountain climbing.
Yes, I climbed a lot.
How many times have you climbed Mount Rainier?
21 to the summit.
21 to the summit.
And I've climbed around 600 mountains in the Cascade Mountains. We live in the foothills of the Cascades. And so I climb many mountains, but when I stood on top of that mountain at almost 25,000 feet, I realized that I wanted to do something with my expeditions rather than take the photos, write notes, and take it all home, put it on the shelf to gather dust. So then I decided on a project called Adventure Classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to take the four corners of the world to students in the classroom and in assemblies and so forth. So Bill retired from... first of all, I walked to the pole. That was the first project for Adventure Classroom. And that was so successful when Charlie and I took that walk to the pole and alone. And I was the first woman to walk alone without any dog teams or snowmobiles or so forth. But it wasn't being first that was important. It was the quality of the journey. What did I learn about myself? What did I learn along the way? What could I bring back for an educational program? It worked out so well that Bill retired from flying to join me in my work with Adventure Classroom. So together...
And what exactly is Adventure Classroom?
Adventure Classroom is We go out to or anywhere in the world, remote places usually, to bring back the photography, the writing, the information, bring it back in programs to present to kids in schools K through 12.
And you're still doing this?
Yes, I do. I've spoken to over a million kids in schools so far since 1988. And
if there are people listening that are saying, ooh, ears are perking up, we'd like to do an adventure classroom for our kids or something, can they get information through your website?
Yes, they can through the website, they get my email address and so forth. And
yeah, HelenThayer.com, folks.
Yes. And then, I also do a lot of adult events. I'm speaking at the Issaquah REI at 7 p.m. on the 13th of this month, and I'll be presenting the Gobi program, Walking the Gobi.
Oh, okay, so that's November 13th?
October 13th. It's just next week.
Oh, October 13th.
Yes.
All right, okay. So next
Tuesday night.
Tuesday night.
At 7 p.m.
7 p.m., and this is where?
At the REI. Issaquah.
Oh, REI in Issaquah.
Yes.
And is there a cost for the event?
No, it's free to the public.
It's free to the public.
Yes.
So REI, Tuesday evening the 13th at 7 p.m., and
yes,
you're going to present
the
slideshow,
yes,
and your presentation on Walking the Gobi, which,
and the
folks,
books will be
we've
available.
Done that here on the air,
yes,
and which is really neat. But in person, it's even better because you'll be able to see the slides and all that good stuff.
Yes,
so,
and the books will be available also.
Books will be available.
All three titles. And,
all three. Okay.
When we come back from an expedition overseas, the first thing I do is put a digital, these days it's not so much slideshow with the old projector, it's now it's a digital image program with the photos of the story of the expedition. And then, and so that's presented, there's a school version for different age groups. And then there's, of course, the adult version. And those are, I have three of those programs now, my Walk to the Pole, and then Three Among the Wolves and Walking the Gobi. And I'm going to be adding this next week, Africa.
Well, you know, we really need to continue, figure out how we can do those programs on the show here,
mm-hmm,
so that you can do the presentation on the show, but then folks at home can be watching the pictures of the slides,
yes,
on their computers,
mm-hmm,
and so we've got to make that a priority to get that done, because then we could do all these shows again. We could do,
yes,
the Polar Dream and the Three Among the Wolves and the Gobi and then the Amazon and all these things.
Yes.
Because mm-hmm, I think the audience, we'd all be happy if we just did that every week. Now, obviously, we can't have you all that often, but boy, it's so exciting to hear your stories and all of that. I mean,
well, it's working out very well for Adventure Classroom. We're reaching the kids, and not only do we talk about and show the images and tell the story of our journeys, but we bring in the motivational message of setting goals, and a goal without a plan is only a dream. So you have to plan, and plan in every detail. Take your time to make sure that plan is in place, and then take that first step to whatever that goal might be.
Mm-hmm.
And then persistence, of course, not giving up on your goal or yourself. So that's worked out very well, and we get wonderful feedback from students, teachers, and the parents. And so that of course encourages us to go on and do more and more.
Yeah. So you do these treks to add more to your adventure classroom.
Exactly. That's why we go overseas and gather the another program
to educate the kids.
That's right. Another program that we have started under the umbrella of Adventure Classroom is Kid to Kid Talk.
Hmm.
We knew in the Amazon we needed to do this. As we were kayaking on the river, we came across a very tiny...
And this is last summer?
Yeah, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Came across a very tiny Amazon school, just about 15 kids. And their whole world was about 4 miles in diameter, and they knew nothing of the outside world.
Wow.
And they asked me to speak at the school. And so what was a mixture of, this was in Brazil, so they speak Portuguese.
I was going to say, what language? They're speaking
and
Portuguese.
So it was a mixture of English.
Do you speak? I know you speak other
not
languages.
Not Portuguese, just Spanish. But also there was a woman there who could speak English. So, so we did rather well in the language part of it. And I chose to tell the kids about the kids living in Alaska. in the snow and ice of Alaska and about polar bears. Well, we discovered the kids had never heard of a polar bear and didn't know what ice was.
Wow.
And they didn't understand frozen water at all. So as we kayaked away from the village and the school, we decided that we needed to do something about this. So in Kid to Kid Talk, we're gathering a worldwide network of remote schools. And they will come into Adventure Classroom, and eventually the school, the kids will be able to communicate with each other through telecommunications, of course, and learn about each other's living conditions and where they go to school and how. And we hope that not only will we increase the information from one region to another, but also increase intercultural respect. If a kid is from Alaska is learning about a kid in Brazil in the Amazon, Brazilian Amazon, becomes friends, well, there's more respect going to grow from that. So we're working on that, and that's working out well. We have a school from the city dump in Tegucigalpa, the capital of Honduras. That was the first school. These kids are born, raised, and die in the dump. There's terrible conditions, but there is a tiny school there, and it's a growing school. That's the first one, and there's a write-up about it in the photos.
Do they have electronic equipment and like the computers and stuff? So is that this is all being done electronically?
Someone did donate a couple of computers to them, so they're able to go online. And then another one was from the Pantanal in Brazil, the world's largest wetlands, a tiny school there. And then the another school was, let me see, what was the other school, Bill? We've got, the Amazon, of course, the Amazon school. And so there are three of those now. And then when we go to Africa, we're going to Tanzania next month to live with the Maasai tribe in a very remote area, not on the tourist route at all. We'll be away from the tourist route, and we will be visiting one of their schools. That school will come into the program. Then after we've spent time living with the Maasai, learning their lifestyle and trekking with them, as they herd their cattle and so forth, so we'll be out trekking again. And then we'll go in February, we hope to go to this back to the Western Sahara and live with the Berber tribe.
Wow.
And visit a Berber, small Berber, very remote Berber school, and that school will come into the program. So as we travel, we'll gather these schools.
They're gathering these schools for the Kid to Kid Talk.
Yes, that's right.
That's fabulous. So if you want more information, folks, or if you'd like to take advantage of Adventure Classroom for adults or for kids, check out Helen's website, www.helenthayer.com. Now, let's go back to the Amazon, because that's your last track. Right.
Yes, well, one of the last ones.
One of the last ones. And so you were down. How long were you doing this one on the Amazon?
We were down on the Amazon probably close to a couple of months.
A couple of months. And so yes. how many miles were
we did around 1,000 miles, perhaps a bit more. And
this is kayaking up and down the Amazon?
The part of the Amazon and tributaries and the Rio Negro. To sort of get the entire picture. And we found that there was flooding in areas where there has not
just
been
the
flooding
two of
before.
You?
Yeah, just the two of us.
And you pack your own stuff.
Yes.
And
live off the land when we can.
Live off the land. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the first time you did the Amazon and the stories you've shared, I mean, you had some really hairy experiences down there. Mm-hmm. Almost got shot, and we talked about the piranha and the killer bees. Any experiences like that this last time?
We had a interesting run-in with the caiman, which is a species of crocodile.
Yeah.
They don't grow as large as a pure crocodile. They only grow to about 9 feet or so.
Only 9 feet.
And so they still have a lot of teeth.
Yeah.
And the rivers, of course, there are many rivers, tributaries, are just infested with these animals. They're just about shoulder to shoulder when they're feeding sometimes.
Wow.
Other times you don't see them. But one time we were inflatable kayaks again.
Oh, inflatable kayaks.
Yes, because that way we can deflate them, put them on our backs and carry them around the waterfalls. And so we came across this group and
A group of caiman?
Yes, we thought the river was clear, so we were paddling through and all of a sudden they just came up. And of course, there's always a danger of them
biting
or capsizing. So we were paddling like fury. An Olympic kayaker could not have kept up with us. We were flying. And so that was really close. And of course, you know,
can you imagine this? Because we're talking 72, 83 here. And you guys are out paddling Olympic kayakers to get away from the Cayman
the
Amazon. Unbelievable.
And so we managed to make that.
Obviously, you're still here.
Yes, that's
right. So you made it another time.
But it's very, we came across a lot of Cayman. At nighttime, we would shine a light out, then you could see these eyes everywhere, and we realized how many there were that we didn't see during the day.
Mm.
And they just can come right up underneath you. And so that's very dangerous, we decided. So we really need to be very careful of that. And it went very well. We learned a lot. There was a lot to learn.
Did you get shot at this time?
No, not this time. Nobody shot at us this time.
All right.
That was nice.
Now, you said that you had one of the, or the major reason, I think, that you went back to the Amazon was to kind of assess the climate stuff. Tell us about
that. That's right.
We
wanted to see what was going on. And so, but we did find that there were areas that had flooded, were now flooding, that had not flooded before. And so the waters are rising in some places, and the climate is getting warmer. And of course, they.
And what is it? Like, you were down there during the summer.
Yes.
Well, so what's the temperature
well,
like down
there?
Well,
we did measure one day, it was just over 100, with about 98% humidity.
It's very humid.
And that's in the shade. Well, it's terribly humid. You just, the perspiration just runs off you. And,
I can't remember if I think I've asked you this before, because you've been in, you know, the North Pole, the South Pole, and very cold climates, the two of you. You've mm-hmm. also been in these really hot and humid mm-hmm. climates. Do you have a preference? Would you rather be cold or hot?
Well, the Amazon climate is pretty tough, because you're just wet through all the time with sweat. And nothing dries. It breeds bacteria very fast. You know, something that you might get wet in the morning can be smell terrible by afternoon. Just by no, at least it doesn't.
Oh, you know. Bill's chiming in to say it, but it doesn't kill you.
No, not like the cold or the heat. The extreme cold of the Antarctic. If you make a mistake, you can die.
You're dead. Okay.
But then, of course, in the extreme heat of the desert, which we experience 126 degrees in the shade in the Gobi, and there is no shade. You can die very fast there if there's no water, because you can't go
down that water.
That's
right, the Gobi, came within a hair.
Yes, that's right, because of the water problem.
Because you ran out of water.
Yes.
And
you
then what was it, one of the camels?
The camels do well. They can go
No, but
time.
I mean, the camel, didn't he roll on the water?
Oh, he rolled on the water.
He rolled on the
and
water
the
and
containers.
Destroyed your water
yes.
supply.
So we were in very, very bad trouble there. But Bill's right, the extreme cold and extreme heat, if you make a mistake, you can die. But in the Amazon, in the humidity, there's always water around you.
Okay.
It's just the heat, the oppressive humidity all the time. But you normally, it's not normally life-threatening. It's the creatures that can get you down
okay.
there.
So, yes, okay.
The piranha in the river, the caiman, the crocodiles. we were chased down by a swarm of bees once and things like that. Those, it has to be some external problem, animals, creatures that can get you down there. The snakes are very bad, of course. You have to always watch. You don't sit down on a log without first of all taking a stick and scraping at the log to make sure the bark really is bark. It's not some insect that looks like the bark.
Amazing, amazing. So personal preference, cold or hot?
Well, it's very strange. Right. When we're in extreme cold, we keep thinking, oh, it would be, you know, 126 degrees. It's really not so bad. Then when you're at 126 degrees, you think, oh, boy, minus 75. You know, I don't know why we complain about
so
that.
So kind of six of one, half
yes,
a dozen of another,
right.
depending on when you're one or the other, you want to be the...
That's
yeah,
right.
Okay,
then
that
we're in
sense.
The rainforest, and the humidity is so oppressive. It's the humidity just comes down on you like a great weight. You lose your energy and you lose your appetite. And you just think, oh, if only I could be cold for a while. You know, just really cold for a while. But nothing is cold. It's hot. You know,
yeah.
It's the humidity rather than the heat in the rainforest.
Yeah.
But we were very disturbed to find that they're cutting the forest down. It's just terrible.
That's
just laid
one thing
to waste.
That I know I feel a real concern
and
for is the destroying of the rainforest.
And we can't blame the native people of the area. There are Americans down there who employ natives to go in and get the best trees and cut them down and bring them out.
And is that for the beautiful wood?
Yes, they bring out the beautiful wood and the Amazon cherry wood floors and other types of exotic lumber that they that's finally produced from these beautiful trees. And so our culture is supporting the destruction of the rainforest.
Mm.
And then, of course, the theory, and it appears to be proven now, that the greater the destruction of the rainforest, it's taking away that environmental umbrella, and it's changing the climate, even excluding other things, the pollutants and so forth. Just taking that rainforest down is changing the climate.
Wow.
And then down in the Pantanal, which borders the Amazon to the south, still in Brazil, it's the world's largest, I believe they tell us, it's the world's largest wetland. And a rancher down there told us that the temperatures, is in his opinion, has gone up 8 degrees in the last 6 years.
8 degrees?
And that's a whole lot.
That's huge.
But the ranching down there is having a tremendous effect on the environment. They're clearing the land. They're taking out, there's the macaw parrot, which is fairly rare. They're taking out, just cutting the trees down so that they can grow grass for the cattle. And so the habitat of these creatures, and there's a peach-fronted parrot, and these are very, very rare birds that we were able to photograph down there. But they're disappearing because their habitat is being destroyed.
Wow.
And instead, on the habitat, of course, they put grass in, then the cattle come in. And now with global warming, the ranchers are talking about the area, afraid that the area will become a great sandy desert one day.
Mm.
So things are really changing down there, and not for the good.
Do you see any hope?
Well, I think people have to change their ways. If people could stop supporting the rainforest, the lumber that comes out of there, stop that, and instead take more interest in the natural medicines that come out of those places, and understand that there's so much good can come out. There are people in the rainforest studying the plants to develop more medicines for mankind. These medicines have been used by the native people for centuries, and now people are beginning to realize that there's so much value in there, and to keep the forest intact so that things will grow.
Yeah. So when you talk about people need to change their ways, you're talking about when we are building things here, mm-hmm. or remodeling and so forth, it's important to pay attention to these beautiful woods, where they come from,
where do they come from?
And we have to stop buying them.
And if we don't support that, then, of course, it takes away the temptation to cut these trees down just to cut them up into lumber and for somebody's floor or whatever. It's the same with animal parts. Animals are just the elephants in Africa are being killed because of the ivory, and right. if people would just stop buying these things, then these animals, there would be no longer any money in it for people to poach them.
Yeah, because the market dries up. I know I wasn't aware of the rainforest and the wood things, I think, until one of the first shows you did with us. We talked about this subject, and I know mm-hmm. now it's right in the forefront for me, and I may go into someone's beautiful home. I may not get invited back, but you see this beautiful, the beautiful wood. Mm-hmm.
And they are beautiful.
My first question is, where did it come from?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times people don't know.
That's right. Yes, they don't, because they didn't think of that, and mm-hmm. they're totally innocent. They just didn't think of that. But those of us who've been there and seen the tree growing, and then we see it chopped down and hauled out, then we see the end product on somebody's floor somewhere. Then we've gone full circle on that process, and so we realize it, but I think a lot of people don't realize it, and it's totally innocent on their part. They just don't understand where it comes from and what it means.
Yeah, and even though the wood is absolutely gorgeous.
It's beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
The survival of the planet is mm-hmm. far more important
yes.
than mm-hmm. having that beautiful wood on your floor.
And if the market would dry up on these things, and of course there would be no, a lot of it is illegal logging as well. A lot of it comes out illegally. Yeah. And they're made by Americans. So we're not doing our part.
So we're not clean in this process.
No,
we're a big part of it.
That's right, yes.
Wow. And So it sounds like there's definitely changes going on everywhere. And,
yes.
But an 8-degree change, that's
yes,
huge.
Yes, the ranchers down there that we spoke to are very concerned because they have a lot invested. Many of them own several thousand acres of the Pantanal area, and they grow cattle. And they're very concerned about
it. It seems to me that I think something is going to have to shift in terms of how we're feeding ourselves and what we're eating. It seems to me that cattle are just not, it's every time we talk about them and where they're being raised, like when we talked to Dr. Al Pluckner and he was doing the environmental work in Idaho, and it was like the ranchers with the cattle would come in and destroy everything.
Exactly.
And then when the government gave them permission to let them roam, it's like all the work he was doing to reestablish the ground covers and plant the trees and all of that, the cattle would come in and just destroy it.
Yes, because so they're heavy on the land. we've seen this in various parts of the world. It's very difficult. For instance, there are some in the northern Gobi who have cattle, and they're the most desperate-looking animals you've ever seen in your life. Cattle are just not suited to conditions of great hardship. Sheep and goats and those animals are far more suited.
Well, and then, of course, in the medical world, we are so stuck on our beef and so forth, but I'm hearing all the time reports of how now eating a lot of beef is associated with heart disease and all kinds of other stuff. And it sounds like we're kind of information is coming that we're going to move away from eating the red meats and
Bill
so forth.
Bill and I, as we travel, and of course we realize it's a very personal choice. And we don't, we certainly would never advocate that we should all become vegetarians. But if we didn't eat the beef, of course it would help tremendously with the cattle problem. Chickens, of course, the way they're raised is just...
Yeah. Now, are the two of you, are you vegetarians?
No, we're sort of very light meat eaters, always thinking, I wonder if we should do this sort of thing, sort of a certain amount of guilt. So that's why we don't say you must become a vegetarian. That's a very personal decision to make
absolutely.
In your life.
Absolutely.
And, but it's so hard for us to see these animals and know that what we humans are really causing out there.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's time for us to take a break in our discussion with Helen and Bill. There, we will take care of our advertisers and sponsors. Then we will come back with current events and a brand new pet of the week. And then we're going to have another full hour with Helen and Bill. So stay with us. Animal World continues right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Darla Ruers wanted to be a veterinarian since the age of 5. Always an empath, natural healer, and visionary artist, Darla wanted to give a voice to the animals and be their advocate on the most gentle, heart-centered, true-feeling way. Her interest in shamanism, plant medicines, and diverse healing forms led her to open the Ancient Arts Healing Arts Center for Pets and People located in Fremont. There is a very tangible link between the symptoms we see in animals and the people they live with, and Dr. Ruers treats the animals, helping their caretakers bring awareness to their part in the wellness. Darla teaches Qigong and art meditation to the humans to help them help their pets. A licensed veterinarian in Washington, Dr. Ruers has been certified in veterinary acupuncture and has practiced alternative therapies on domestic and exotic species since 2002. She has been doing house calls and office visits in the greater Puget Sound area since 2005. For more information, go to ancientartsvet.com or call 206-547-1025. That's 206-547-1025. Massage is good for everyone, including your pets. Learn animal massage close to home at the Northwest School of Animal Massage. Teaching pet owners and horse owners since 2001, the Northwest School of Animal Massage offers flexible online and hands-on classes, including aromatherapy for animals with Joan Sarita of Sarita Body Works on October 3rd and 4th. And animal communication with Polly Klein on October 17th and 18th. Enroll in the distance learning program to prepare for fall classes. For more information, go to NWSAM.com or call 877-836-3703. That's 877-836-3703. 3703.
This new year, give your dog, cat, or ferret the gift of great health naturally. Make NuPro all-natural supplements an essential part of your pet's diet. NuPro makes an awesome gravy sure to please. This gravy provides fresh nutrients for a beautiful, silky skin and coat, a strong immune system, and a healthy digestion, among other wonderful benefits. NuPro's joint support formula is perfect for working dogs, large breeds, and especially seniors. So go with NuPro, your pet's best friend for over 20 years. Go to NuProSupplements.com for more information. That's NuProSupplements.com.
Body, mind, and spirit. Alternative Talk 1150 covers it all.
Hey, y'all, Martha Norwalk, and we're winding down the second hour of this week's edition of Animal World, but you can find us here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. And keeping with tradition right now, it means it's time for current events.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, so you can see, folks, he's not perfect. But the Jingle Cats are, so here we go. Better be working on that husky fight song, boy.
I was about to play the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Jump the gun a little bit.
We'll get there. We'll get there. See, the karma's going to haunt you on this one, Gear. All right. Today, happening today, if you are considering adding a dog friend to your family, you may want to get out to the Barktoberfest. Dog adoption event is today from noon to 3 at the Academy of Canine Behavior in Bothell. Come meet all the adorable dogs from 9 shelters and rescues around the state. There'll be trainers, staff, and volunteers on hand to help you find the perfect match. That's today at the Academy of Canine Behavior in Bothell from noon to 3 p.m. Next Saturday, October 17th, Dr. Mike Saluski, a.k.a. Philip Marshall, the author of Barn Politics, one of our Animal World holistic vets here, will be doing a book signing at Olson's Tack Shop in Bellevue next Saturday from 11 to 4 p.m. These are a long time. And Olson's Tack Shop is on 140th Northeast in Bellevue. Again, he's there from 11 to 4 p.m. next Saturday. Signing books, probably doing some readings and that sort of thing as well. For information, www.olsontack.com. Now, National Feral Cat Day is October 16th, and it will be celebrated by Feral Cat Spay and Neuter Project with a full Feral Friday on that day. They'll also be doing extra feral spays and neuters during the week as well. They want you to spread the word and contact Melissa at Feral Cat Spay and Neuter. You can email her, melissa@feralcatproject.org, to make a reservation. Pours for Purrs is a beer tasting and silent auction to benefit Feral Cat Spay and Neuter on November 14th. So mark your calendar. It will be 7 to 10 p.m. at the Malt and Vine on Redmond Way in Redmond. It's $30 per person, $50 for two. You RSVP to events@feralcatproject.org. South County Cats Spay and Neuter Assistance Organization is holding its second annual Cattoberfest, a celebration of cats, on Saturday, October 17th at the Black Diamond Community Center. And that will be from 1 to 4 p.m. There'll be a silent auction, kitten adoptions, food, facts, and more. The first 30 kids will be able to adopt a stuffed kitty at no cost. Fun for the entire family and free admission. However, a donation of canned cat food or non-clumping litter would be appreciated. And let's see, www.southcountycats.petfinder.org for more information. Oh boy, Parent Husbandry, an enrichment talk by Dr. Amy Smith on Monday, October 19th, 7 p.m. at Hawks Prairie Veterinary Hospital in Lacey. Excuse me. 12th annual Black Cat Ball, benefiting Perfect Pals in Arlington, is October 24th at the Maidenbauer Center in Bellevue. Dinner, silent, and live auctions. And let's see, I think that probably covers the important stuff. All of the pet food banks are low on food and need help these days. So, and then next week, of course, Philip Marshall, a.k.a. Dr. Mike Saluski will be in the house. We will be discussing his book, Barn Politics, Murder Mysteries, giving away books and all of that good stuff. So be here next week. That will wrap up current events and make it time for Pet of the Week.
Do you see that doggy in the shelter? The one with the take me home eyes. If you give him love and attention, he will be your best friend for life.
All right. Speaking of best friends for life, we have the interim manager of King County Animal Care and Control. Nancy McKinney is here. Good morning, Nance. Nancy?
Yeah.
Oh, hello.
Good morning.
Gary's just a little off the ball today. Poor guy, you know, he just is so inflexible. Karma's catching up with
Uh-oh.
Him today.
He needs to adopt a cat.
No, he needs to find the Husky fight song is what he needs to do. But he's stubbornly refusing to do that, and of course, his technical abilities are suffering as a result. All right. Well, what a week it's been. I think we only have time to deal with pets of the week. Probably a good thing. And let's see. Oh, and I want to let everybody know. Folks, if you want more details on any of the current events items or want to see the Pets of the Weeks, go to the Animal World website, www.marthanorwalk.com. Click on current events. You'll find everything there. I guess in line with everything else, Nancy, we might as well start with the sad news first.
Right. Tyson, our big old black lab, our black lab mix.
And he was our pet of the week last week.
Right. And we guessed he was 10 years old. He was a stray, so we didn't really know what his issues or problems were. No one claimed him, no ID. And we put him on some arthritis medicine and hoped that that would help ease his pain, but in the last week, he just really deteriorated so much that he couldn't walk, and we just had to make that painful decision to put him out of pain. So he was euthanized on Friday.
Well, bless his heart. Mm-hmm. And at least he was with people who were loving and caring for him.
Exactly. We gave him a chance. But again, if people do have pets, we hope they at least put ID tags on them and try to find them when they get lost and or tell us they don't want the dog anymore. And give us more information. So yeah. We don't know all the story behind him, but, yeah, it was really sad because he had a great personality, but just, you know, we couldn't let him suffer anymore.
Well, you know, sometimes that is the best choice. I do believe it is a gift that we can give our animal friends. Helen's nodding, and she agrees. You know, it's a wonderful gift to help them leave their bodies without suffering. And, you know, I've learned that lesson over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, especially when you're in the rescue and shelter business, we can't save them all.
Right.
And of course, we've learned from Granny the whale in our own orca whale population here that it's only one lifetime. You know, the soul is eternal. And so anyway, unfortunate and sad, but at least he was cared for by loving people at the end. Now, let's. How about our bull terrier mix, Misty, who is...
Misty's still there.
Misty's still there. Jeez, we got to get some of these kids adopted. And how about our Chow Chow, Tommy?
Tommy is still there, too. I'm so surprised. So, we have some great dogs and, of course, great cats. So that's why I decided I'll start on a cat again this week.
So who is our new pet this week?
Oh, it's Liza. And Liza's one of these just basic black cats, so I think she has been with us for a couple months, and I think that's why she's not getting attention. And
gee, it's October, and Halloween's coming up.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think there's some people out there who don't know that they're really good cat people until they get a cat.
Uh-huh.
So we're trying to find somebody out there who says, gee, I've never had a cat in my life. I'm not sure I like them. We'd love for them to just have their lives changed by bringing Liza home, because she would change your life for the best.
Yeah.
Super sweet, loves to be petted. She's very talkative when she gets with the volunteers in the room, the cat cuddle room.
She looks very cute. She's all black. Looks gold, big gold eyes.
And she's 6 years old.
6 years old.
Uses her litter box, and she was a stray. So we don't know her background. She's been spayed. And just again.
I can tell you now, often when you say she's a talker, Siamese cats are often talkers.
Mm.
And genetically, a Siamese outcross, the first generation is often all black.
Oh, okay.
So it's very likely that Liza has some Siamese in her.
Oh, that's good to know.
No, it may not, but that's just a little FYI.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and I don't know where I learned that, but I learned that somewhere, that outcross Siamese come out black.
That's great.
Yeah. Hey,
and again, we just have so many great adult cats, and I think she's just not been given the right attention, but she would make somebody a great companion. And again, healthy, uses her litter box. She's only 6 years young. And we just wanted to try to